Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
January 23rd, 2007, The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, high dynamic range. That's right, we're going to get back to a little photo technique today. I know I like to mix it up and have a variety of topics. And today we're going to look at a way that you can expand the dynamic range of your photographs. Now, what does that mean? Well, it's a very interesting sort of thing. For instance, you know, part of the problem that we have as photographers is that our eyes and our brain can really see a lot of detail in shadow areas and highlight areas at the same time. But when we point our camera to those very same scenes, our camera naturally doesn't have the ability to capture the same range of tones that our eyes can. And this is basically what we call the dynamic range of an image. Now, for instance, just to give you an idea, our eyes can pick up about 50,000 subtle variations in tone. Now, if we're shooting in JPEG, like an 8-bit JPEG, it can pick up about 256 of those variations. That's a big difference. Now, of course, one of the ways that we can write out of the shoot, even without doing anything special, is a shoot in RAW mode. Right away, we can capture more information, more of those variations, just by switching from JPEG to RAW. And, you know, if you're seeing right now, that when you shoot landscape or when you shoot scenes that have, you know, dark shadow areas and some highlights too, and you're just really having a hard time, you know, you sort of feel like you have to choose, right? You either have to choose to expose to the highlight area or you have to choose to expose for the shadow area. And if you're not getting anything in the other area that you're not exposing for and you're shooting JPEG, the first thing that you can do to give you a little bit more information is go to RAW. Now, beyond that, though, there's a technique that you can use called, you know, merging images, you know, for high dynamic range. And this is actually something that I first saw in Photoshop CS2. Now, I think more and more people are getting excited about this technique, and I think we'll start to see standalone applications and other ways to create, you know, these merged images. But right now, the easiest way to do it is if you have Photoshop CS2, or even if you're testing the beta of Photoshop CS3, which is available right now, and you can only get the beta for CS3 if you're a registered owner of CS2. You need that registration number to download the beta. But either way, in CS2 or CS3, you can play with the high dynamic range function. And I'm going to talk a little bit about it right now, you know, hopefully to motivate you to give this thing a whirl. Now, there are two parts to this. The first part is capture, and you do have to do some things on the capture side with your camera. And then the second part is after you've loaded the images onto the computer and you go to the merge. I'm going to start with capture right now. Now, just as a little bit of background, you know, one of the ways traditionally that we used to expand dynamic range in our photographs, especially for landscapes. And again, you know, the classic problem is when you have a bright sky, but you have information in the sky that you really want to be part of the image, let's say some great looking clouds, things like that. And you also have, you know, the foreground. So you have, you know, grass and flowers and trees and bushes and rocks and things like that. And we all know that it's very difficult to get good detail in both aspects of the photo, just pointing our camera and shooting straight. Now, what we used to do, what I used to do, and what many photographers used to do, and I actually, you know, was originally exposed to this technique by the late Galen Roll, is that use a graduated filter, a neutral density graduated filter. I don't know why that's hard to say right now, but it just is. And the way this thing would work, it would be a square piece of glass that had at the top of it, it would be sort of smoky and in neutral density. So supposedly it wouldn't introduce any color into your image. And then it would get lighter as it go down to about halfway through the glass, and then it would just tail off, and then it would be clear on the bottom part. And what you would do is you put this in a filter holder in front of your lens, and you would slide it up and down, the thinking being that the darker gray area would go against the sky, and then the clear area would go against the foreground, which wasn't quite as bright. And it would be a way to bring those two areas, the exposure of those two areas, closer together. And it actually works fairly well as long as you have a fairly straight horizon line. Because, you know, as the darkness, you know, works its way down and gets lighter and then goes into the clear, it does do so in more or less of a straight line. So as long as your horizon line is straight and you don't have things, you know, big trees jutting up into the sky that are going to be affected by these two different areas of the filter, you are pretty okay. And actually, you could get some amazing results. And you can still use this today with your digital camera also. It's not just, you know, a pure film thing. It's just in the film days, when we were shooting slides, we didn't really have, you know, the options, the post-production options that we have today with Photoshops and other image editors. So we sort of had to do it all in the camera, and this graduated neutral density filter was one of the best ways. Now, there are expensive ones that will cost you a couple hundred dollars, and they're really good. And one of the reasons why they're really good is because they don't introduce any color at all. They are truly neutral. Now, I've also used them, and I have a variety of them made by Kokin, C-O-K-I-N, and they're a lot more affordable. The whole Kokin filter system is a lot more affordable. But I noticed that on the neutral ones, sometimes I would pick up a little magenta tone in the sky. They weren't as purely neutral as the more expensive filters that cost, you know, four or five times more. But at any rate, you can find Kokin filters. You can buy them new, and you can usually find them used. And they're sort of fun to play around with. So even if you're not feeling like doing any new Photoshop technique at all, if you just want to sort of play with, you know, getting the sky in the foreground more within a tonal range that your digital camera, you know, can record, then looking at these neutral density filters that are in a bracket and that you can kind of slide up and down are really a great way to go. And in fact, these graduated filters also come in various colors so that you can even add special effects while you're shooting. I have one that's a tobacco color, and I have another one that's a blue color. And so not only are you, you know, matching, you know, the exposure of the sky in the foreground, you're actually, you know, doing a little color in the sky while you're doing it. It's really a lot of fun. And I think it's even in some ways more fun with a digital camera because you can just experiment, and it doesn't really cost you a lot of money. When I was shooting slides, and I would use these things, you know, I might use two, three rolls of slides and get, you know, maybe one or two pictures that I liked because, you know, you're doing the best you can in terms of, you know, guessing how things are going to turn out. But you really don't know until the film comes back from the lab. Digital makes that so much better. So I guess, you know, the first step in playing with high dynamic range is actually to look at, you know, graduated filters. And it's a very kind of low-tech, low-cost way to go. They're a lot of fun. But now we can get more serious about it thanks to the wonderful tools we find in Photoshop. If you're capturing for post-production in Photoshop, the technique is much different than using the graduated filter. Because now, instead of just taking one shot with the filter in place over the lens, you don't really have any filters in front of your lens. The thinking is now what you're going to do is take a series of shots that are bracketed exposure-wise, and then you're going to merge the tonal values from those shots later on in Photoshop. Now, the easiest way, and I think the best way to start out experimenting with this, it's not the easiest way, it is the best way, is to actually use a tripod. The reason being that you want all of these frames at these different exposures to be composed exactly the same. It makes it a lot easier for the application to merge the images together and more accurately. Now, I'll talk a little bit about handheld technique in a minute, but to start with, to really get a good feel for what the merge to HDR function can do in Photoshop is really record your images with a tripod, at least for your initial tests. Now, what I usually do, and I've played around a lot with this, you can do something as simple as a three-frame bracket. So, for instance, you would capture the first frame one stop underexposed, and then your second frame at whatever the meter reading tells you, normal exposure, let's say, and then the third frame one stop overexposed. That would be, you know, the basic HDR merge right there. And, you know, the thinking being, of course, when you're underexposed, you're going to capture information that you're not getting with the overexposure. And you combine all three of those images with tonal values, and suddenly you've expanded the range of tones in your final picture that is much more than either one of those three individual shots. Now, I know a lot of folks like to do five frames when they're capturing for high dynamic range. And Nikon owners, a lot of Nikon cameras actually have five-frame auto bracketing, which is pretty slick. So you could do something like minus two stops, minus one stop, normal exposure, plus one stop, plus two stops, and have it all in an auto bracket mode where you just basically, you know, hold down the shutter and you go boom, 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 five frames. Now, most Canon cameras only give you a three-frame auto bracketing. So then if you're using a Canon, you're kind of stuck more with doing either manual exposure or, you know, using manual exposure is probably the most accurate, but you can also leave it in something like program mode or landscape mode and use your exposure compensation dial to get the different settings. So, for instance, let's say that you were in, you know, some sort of scene mode or program mode. You would set up your first exposure using the exposure compensation scale to minus two stops, take a frame, then change the exposure compensation scale to minus one stop, take a frame, on through the series. So it's not quite as convenient as having, say, a five-frame auto bracket, but you can get the job done, and, you know, what the heck, you are shooting, you know, landscape, so you shouldn't be in that much of a hurry. Now, you may be wondering, why do I keep saying shooting landscape? Why not other scenes for high dynamic range? Well, think about it. You know, you are merging images together to, you know, get the most out of their tonal values. So if your frames are changing, you know, in terms of subject material, that's going to create a real problem for merging them. So if you have somebody, let's say, walking through the frame as you go through your five-frame auto bracket, that's not going to create a good merge at all. You want everything to remain in the same place for the whole series of frames. That's very important to, you know, really get the most out of this technique. So that's why we end up with landscape. Now, one of the reasons why I do like auto bracketing for capturing these sequences is because it happens quickly. You know, it's boom, 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 boom. If you're doing it manually, I think you should work quickly because even things such as clouds in a sky can move, you know, over the course of a few seconds. So if it's taking you, say, 5 or 10 seconds in between frames, you know, by the time you go through the whole sequence, it may take you as long as 30 seconds. Now, that doesn't sound like a long time, but you know how clouds move and you know how other things move in landscape scenes, and 30 seconds can be a long time. So you want to capture those frames as quickly as possible so that the subject and the position of the contents of each frame is in pretty much exactly the same place through the whole series of exposures. Now, the nice thing about auto bracketing is that it does record frames quickly enough to where you can, under certain conditions, handhold your cameras and play with HDR. Now, the thinking being is that what you want to do is you really want to lock down your position, right? So this is the kind of thing where you hold the camera up snugly. Let's say tightly against your face, right? You lock your elbows against your body, right? And you get the whole thing composed. You have auto bracketing set on so that you're going to, you know, let's say do a 3-frame exposure, one under normal and one over. Squeeze the shutter button and quickly, you know, record those boom, 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 those frames. If you do that and if you hold the camera very steady while doing so, Photoshop will, you know, through its automate function that allows you to merge to HDR, it will do some alignment for you. So even if you have slight movement in between the frames, Photoshop can deal with that. And most of the time, the results are pretty good. But you want to hold that camera really still, and you want to make sure that you use the HDR function in Photoshop because it will do some alignment for you. Generally speaking, though, for best results, you want to use a tripod for capturing your frames for merging to HDR because they're just going to be more dead-on accurate. And I think in the long run, if you're really looking for high-quality results, that's the best way to go. Okay, now I want to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the Photoshop side of pulling these images together. I want to cover real quickly just a reminder about this month, January's photo assignment, which is Glimmer, and the shots that are coming in are looking really good. So I think there was some discussion up front about, you know, how do I approach this assignment and so forth, but what I see coming in looks terrific. So I hope you're working on your entry for this month's photo assignment. And remember, all you have to do if you have questions about how to submit is just go to the submissions page at thedigitalstory.com, and there's all the information there. It's really important that you have the subject line correct on the email when you send in your photo. That way I'll find it, and we won't have anything fall between the cracks. Also remind you about grab shots. Keep them coming. They're starting to flow in again, and I really love being able to run as many grab shots as possible. And last, I want to thank both of our sponsors, the Expo Disc from Expo Imaging, and that's expodisc.com. Really a great way to get correct white balance. And, you know, when we're talking about HDR today, you know, having correct color balance as you capture all of these exposures really makes your post-production work a lot easier, and you can focus on merging to HDR and not getting the color right, which is a big help because you're dealing with a lot of frames here. And also want to thank the good folks over at Photo Magico. Definitely the best way to make high-definition slideshows from your images, and you can find out more about them at photomagico.com. All right, let's get to Photoshop now, and let's start merging these images together. Once you have your pictures loaded onto your computer, and this is true for, you know, Mac users, Windows users, there's really no difference in platform here. Photoshop basically works the same for both platforms, especially when merging to HDR. So the thing now is, you know, you want to make sure you know where your HDR images are located so that you can direct Photoshop to them. Now, the way to do that is that you actually open Photoshop, and then you go to File, and you look down on the File pop-up menu, you'll find Automate. And so you click on that, and then down at the bottom of the Automate menu, you'll find Merge to HDR. So it's sort of hidden. You have to go File, Automate, Merge to HDR. Now, once you do that, Photoshop will ask you for the images that you want to merge to create your high dynamic range photo. The way that you do that is, of course, you know where they're located, and you pick the images in the sequence that you want. So it'll either be the 3 images or 5 images, or if you've gone really crazy, you know, the 7 images that are the images that are going to go from dark to light that you're going to merge together. Now, this is really kind of fun because your computer can actually, you know, show you only slices of a high dynamic range photo at once. So, you know, you'll pull all the images together. Photoshop will merge the range for you. And then you have like a slider bar where you can see, you know, different interpretations of this merge. In other words, it's sort of like moving a window over the whole dynamic range until you find an area that really is satisfying. And you can save these out. You can save them out actually as 32-bit images. But the problem with that is there's not a whole lot you can do with them. I usually recommend saving them out as 16-bit images. And then you can make some really nice-looking prints, or you can share them with people on the web. But you really have some choice in far as how you interpret these merges. So, you know, Photoshop takes all the information, puts it together, and then it's sort of up to you to pick, you know what along this continuum of high dynamic range, what area that you want to display. And I really encourage you to have some fun with this. Now, I have an article here, and let me see. I'll put it in the show notes, but I'll also tell you about it right now, because you could search for it on Google, and it'll help you. It's called Extend Your Dynamic Range. And I wrote it for Macworld magazine, and they put it online. And the date on it is February. It's the February 2006 issue of Macworld magazine, but you can get it online. So anyway, extend your dynamic range, and I really walk you through, you know, the whole process here of how to do this, and it's really kind of cool. I have some example photos. I talk about, you know, different techniques for making the exposures. I talk about, you know, merging the photos and some of the stuff around that, and then, you know, really a way to, you know, evaluate your work. Now again, you know, merging with HDR, it's just like anything else that you do on the computer using Photoshop or any other image editor, is that the higher the quality of the information that you're putting into the application, then the higher the quality of the information that you're going to get out. So I think this is a process where you really want to take great care at capture, you know, making sure that you get your white balance correct, making sure that you have really nice compositions, you know, making sure that all the little details that make a great landscape photograph are there at capture. Because then when you do the merge, you can really focus on, you know, finding that magic area where you have, you know, where you have retaining the highlights and retaining the shadow details and really making a nice print or a nice image to share via the web or however you want to do it. So this is a process. This isn't a, you know, kind of a rapid fire, you know, sort of thing. This is something where you really bring out the craftsman in you to, you know, create something that you wouldn't be able to do by taking a simple snapshot. So, just to review really quickly, if you want more range in your photos, there's a couple things you can do. Now, for moving subjects and things that aren't just static landscapes, first thing you can do is obviously switch from JPEG to RAW. I think, you know, that alone will give you access to so much more tonal information in your photographs. So JPEG to RAW, really nice thing to do. And I'm thinking that for the most part, if you can capture in RAW, I would probably just leave it in RAW most of the time to get all that information that's available. Now, another thing that you can do, and this is kind of fun, is to play with these, you know, graduated filters, you know, especially the neutral density one that allows you to, you know, kind of darken areas of the photograph to bring the range, you know, basically you're compressing the range of your photograph so that right at capture you can have, you know, retain more information in the sky and the foreground. And you can use this creatively too. You can, you know, these things, these filters are usually in a holder that rotate around and so forth. So you can have a lot of fun with these. You can usually pick up a set, especially the Kokens, for fairly cheap if you shop around a little bit. And they're really a great way to, you know, kind of have a little fun with your photography. So there's another technique you can do. And then if you really want to get serious about things and you have access to Photoshop CS2, then I would really try the merge to HDR function. I think it's really exciting, and it allows us to, you know, create photographs that really weren't able to do before, at least in terms of tonal information, or at least without doing a whole lot of work that's more difficult than the merge to HDR function in Photoshop. So there's some really interesting ways there that you can get more tonal information in your photographs. Hopefully, then you'll make some really nice big prints and show them off. And this is great stuff. All right, well, that will do it for this week. I hope I've inspired you to go out and do a little shooting of a different ilk. Take your tripod with you. You'll be glad you did. And I will see you here next week. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.